This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 371 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from We're clearly keeping Glyn up. I guess we'll make it quick then.
What? Are we here again?
We are.
So every week, you wake me up every week, do a podcast, and then you put me back to sleep for a week. You get take me out of the closet. You pretend that I'm actually in Melbourne. I'm just stuck in a little shoebox in your wardrobe. Yeah. Everyone should know this. It's just Bruce's voice done through like a vocalizer.
We'll call you the Gimp. A la right. Pulp Fiction, not the image editing program.
Yeah, we're hoping. I'm an image editor.
Yeah. How's your week been?
No, it's my job. How's your week been today, my friend?
It's been intense.
You're what, camping?
It's like I've been at camp. That's
right. Do you know you can't run through a campsite?
Okay.
You can only run because it's past tense.
Nice.
There you go. You've been intense all week.
It's been a very intense week at work, not photography related, but just work related.
Well, let's not spoil this podcast by having anything photography related.
Yeah, they decided to move me into a new studio after 8 years with basically no warning. Although, admittedly, I had been suggesting that we should do this for the last 8 months, but I figured it was falling on deaf ears.
You weren't actually expecting it to happen.
No, exactly. And then on top of that, they took away my PC and gave me a Mac.
Oh, sorry.
So I'm ready to slit my wrists already. And then they've taken away the digital audio workstation that we've been using for the last 8 years and given me Pro Tools, which I have for years been vocally opposed to because I think it's a piece of crap.
But I just...
Yeah. What?
It doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me, I have to say.
Well, when they said, you know, that we were going... Because they've been saying... Well, they've been threatening for like 3 years that we were going to get Macs and we were going to be switching to Pro Tools. And I have said all along, why? Why bother? It's a crap system. It might be the industry leader. It's like Windows. It's not the best product. It's just the one that was best marketed, and everybody knows it because it was so well marketed, but it doesn't make it a great system. And they've gone, yeah, but when we need to get freelancers in to cover you and Greg when you're away, nobody knows how to drive our system.
So let's get the people who run all the time to suffer for the occasional instance where somebody else may pop in.
Exactly.
That makes sense?
Exactly.
No, that's got all the logic of corporations.
Yeah, exactly. So on top of that, the four-day week prior to Easter is always the busiest week of the year for radio commercial production.
Really?
Yeah. Simply because you're producing content for the following 5 days.
So you're doing 2 weeks' work, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. So it's been a pretty full-on week. So I'm looking forward to the next 4 days off.
I bet. Yeah. Well, let's give everyone a bit of an Easter gift.
Yeah.
And make this a short podcast.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
The shorter we make it,
yep.
The happier, the more listeners we'll get. Well, listen, might listen to at least half of the podcast.
That's right. Yeah. So how has your week been?
Well, it's been school holidays. Yeah. Second week of school holidays. That's always challenging, shall we say. Yeah. I have to do some corporate headshots for the missus.
Oh, so okay.
I set up a little quick studio and did some quick lighting shots for the missus because she got a promotion and wanted some new LinkedIn shots before she announced the promotion. So nice. When people came and looked at her profile, she had this nice new pic.
Yeah, nice.
Plus, her company did corporate headshots at the last big meeting in Sydney a few weeks ago, and they were all diabolically bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just shocking lighting, shocking backgrounds, unprofessionally done. Yeah, for the entire company, it's just like, God.
Which is how many people?
I don't know, probably only about 60 or 70, but yeah, 60 or 70 bad shots still doesn't make the company look very good.
No.
So I did a couple of nice shots. That was a bit of photography I did.
Yeah, cool.
Then I was up, but I spent the day yesterday with the lovely David Marland, he of our book reviews.
Oh, cool.
So how I drove up to Ararat and, oh, no, I didn't ask.
And?
He looked okay. Didn't actually ask. Right. Just doing some location work for our psychotic break weekend.
Yep.
Going up and meeting the people who run the mental asylum, or run the premises that had the mental asylum on.
Yeah.
Do you know, 13,000 people died in these buildings.
What?
13,000 people died.
Over what period of time?
130 years.
Okay.
It's two a day.
Yeah, right.
For 130 years, it's quite astounding. And whilst I have so we've pretty much got carte blanche access. We'll have like a master keys. We'll get us just about anywhere in the entire 63 buildings that are on this site.
Wow. And,
however, on the day, because I had my kids with me, he said, look, I'm not going to take you to the areas you're probably going to want to go because it's so oppressive. It is so, yeah, you'll need breakout points to come out so people can recover.
Wow.
Before going back in to shoot.
Wow.
There are areas in the space apparently that are so psychically disturbed.
Yep.
That, yeah, even rational, yeah, educated people don't have a very nice experience in there. So
wow.
So it's going to be. So I haven't been to any of those yet. So I can't say how wow. that's affected me. But we're going to go up again in a little bit closer to the date and do some actual. Okay, we'll shoot here. We'll shoot here. We'll shoot here. Kind of stuff.
Yep.
But yes, that's kind of daunting. 13,000 people.
Wow, that is amazing.
It is, isn't it? It's you couldn't think of any institution in Australia that would have had that volume of deaths in it.
No.
Other than major hospital, a major medical hospital.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And then we went up to the Great Western wineries, and they have these kilometres of underground, what they call them drives. They're tunnels, basically, where they store the wine.
Oh, wow.
And they're kilometres, and they're 100, 120, 130 years old or whatever, these tunnels.
Wow.
They go back to the days of the Australian opera singer Dame Millie Melba.
Yeah, so right.
The 1880s, 1880s. That kind of time, and we have full access to the whole lot.
What?
Thanks to our lovely man Dave.
That's awesome.
So we're going to be doing some incredibly cool shoots down in there. So that got organised, and then we're going to be shooting in Woodsy's backyard. This is some local character who's got a field with old trucks and all sorts of other stuff in it to photograph. So that'll be kind of. So we've got some really cool stuff lined up. I'm looking forward
that
to
sounds
it.
Sounds great.
Yeah, looking forward to it big time. We're even going to do a wine tasting at the winery whilst we're there, I thought.
Right.
It's kind of a nice way to spend an hour.
Yeah, right. Do that over lunch.
The other thing I did this week was I got in touch with our lovely friends from Narbox.
Oh, yeah.
I did a flash workshop. I remember that now. Yeah, that's all of Saturday last week. A long time ago. With a new model. And the guy shows up, he's 6'6".
Wow.
The tall bugger, And a skinny looking little dude. I thought I was waiting for this kind of buff dude to show up.
Yeah.
And this tall, skinny, 6'6" kid shows up.
Right.
Going, oh. So I said, yeah. And this other really beefy model, as in muscular toned model, put me onto this guy.
Yeah.
And I said, so what are you packing under the shirt? He goes, oh, same as Matthew, which is the beep. And I said, no way. Took his shirt off. My God. Hello, boys. So he was good fun to shoot.
Yeah,
so
we
did a good flash workshop. And then I said, I had a phone call with our lovely, my lovely new friends, Narbox in California.
And
they're skater dudes.
Yeah.
So, it's all, the conversation was, yes, gnarly man. And, it's like talking to Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. A little bit, not much, a little bit, just in case they're listening. So they're sending me a unit over, and I actually went back and watched their video on how their app works, and their video editing app is astounding.
Right.
You can load up 4K video, you can edit a day's footage, to get a highlight reel in minutes flat, all on your phone, all via this Narbox device.
Wow.
And upload it straight from there, straight to whatever you want to upload it to. Piece of pie.
Wow.
It's like, you pull up a clip, you just touch a point. Okay, I want this is the start point, this is the end point. Bang, bang.
Right.
And slide it up to the highlight reel. It's one finger, flicking it with your finger, and away you go. You're editing.
Right.
It looks fabulous. And then their raw photo editor, once again, it's not going to do everything off it. It's not going to do layers and stuff like that. But if you're on the field, you want to do a quick edit, you have contrast, brightness, clarity, highlight shadows, RGB channels, all sorts of stuff, curves, color temperature, all this sort of stuff, all can be done with the touch of a finger on your phone.
Sweet.
With all your photos on. And so the Narbox device, so it's a quad-core computer built into this thing.
Yep.
It's shockproof and waterproof.
Yeah.
Which is 128 gig solid state drive inside it, it must be solid state.
Nice.
And then you can just connect a hard drive, do it to get whatever portable storage you want. So I'll be connecting a couple of 500 gig SSDs, and I've got a terabyte of storage.
Yeah, right.
So because it's got all the processing power in the box,
yep,
it's fast. It does everything so quickly, you know. So awesome. I've got one of those on the way over here. So as soon as it arrives, I'll give it a thorough look over and let you know.
Awesome.
So that's been my moderately productive week.
Cool. All right, well, should we get into some stories?
We can look at some stuff.
Yeah. The first thing is something that I came across. I actually found this the middle of last week, and I put it in a place where I forgot to check. So I did actually mean to have this in last week's episode. And it's a website called Verify, VERIFLY.com. And I guess we should have expected that this kind of business would pop up in no time at all. What these guys do is offer on-demand insurance for photographers who are flying drones / UAVs by the hour. So instead of having to buy a yearly, contract, you just say, I'm going out, I'm going to be shooting between this time and that time, and this is where I'm going to be shooting and what I'm going to be shooting and the type of environment in which I'm going to be shooting. And they'll give you an insurance policy to cover you for your activities during that time frame, which I think is a great idea.
It's possible it's okay.
Yeah. Look,
I mean, it depends on what it covers you for and what the cost is, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But for those photographers that are going into it commercially, I could see this being, a core necessity in your business plan.
So I've been looking at this insurance stuff a little bit, mostly based around what people in the US are talking about. And they've got a thing called State Farm Insurance, one of their biggest insurers.
Okay.
And you can get full coverage insurance for like $80 a year.
Wow. That's cheap.
So if your drone flies off and disappears into the ocean, full replacement.
Wow. For $80 a year.
Yeah.
That is crazy cheap.
Yeah, it does depend on the state, because this is what gets a bit crazy over there. It's every state's got its different insurance laws.
Okay.
Yeah, so it depends on which state you're in as to how much it costs and what it covers, et cetera, et cetera. And that could be the case with, with this Verify, how do they sort of cover different regulations, and if you break regulations in different countries, how does that affect your insurance and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I should also say that this is only available in the US, Verify.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but it was just the first product or / service of its type that I have seen, and it's probably not the only one out there, but
it was just they're marketing themselves.
Yeah. It's noticeable. I think it popped up in my Facebook feed of all places, and I went, what the? So I thought it was worth a mention. So, yeah. Next one I came across on
Petapixel. Not much of a
mention, but... No. Came across on Petapixel. Comparing the image quality of film and digital. And this kind of grabbed me simply because last week you were talking about you believe that the resurgence of interest in shooting film is because, it makes you slow down and, appreciate what's involved in creating a good image. With digital, it's just so easy to go, bam, chimp. Oh, no, that didn't work. Shoot it again. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And what I found interesting going through this blog post was just how crap film looks in comparison with digital.
And can I also say, why the hell aren't they comparing apples with apples? So they're comparing a 35mm size sensor digital...
Yep.
With a medium format film.
I know.
Why would you not get a 35mm film camera to do a comparison? It's like that just is bonkers.
Or get a medium format digital back so you can comparing medium format and medium format.
That straight away shows complete lack of
comprehension.
Everything, effectively. Yeah. Everything. Yeah.
But it's interesting, just looking at clarity, looking at color rendition, looking at noise, you know, I look at it and I go, meh, you know what? I actually think the digital looks better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
and what was their conclusion, did you find?
Well, the conclusion at the end of the blog post said, film still has a lot to offer, especially with the price of very high-quality cameras so low. Using high-res black and white film is well-documented these days, although you have to process it yourself, and the latest version of slide and negative color film are stunning. Portra has been reformulated for scanning and has immense dynamic range, and Fuji Provia is one of the highest resolving slide films ever made. As for scanning, film scanners can be had for reasonable prices, even drum scanners. And finally, medium format drum scanners can be had for $20. My conclusion, it's a great time to be using film and digital.
Isn't it funny that the guy who did the article is the CEO of a drum scanning business?
I would never
have picked. Gee, conflict of interest. I'm not going to say film's bad because I rely on it to make my income.
Yeah.
That's like I don't know, it's like saying someone who digs up coal for a living to go and do a research on energy and what's good for the environment. Yeah. No, coal, she's all right. Yeah, of course she does stuff up the atmosphere.
Yeah, no, it's clean coal. It's clean coal.
It's clean coal, yeah.
I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I love to cut straight to the chase of this stuff. I just love to cut through all the hyperbole or that hyperbole, whichever you want to pronounce it.
Rob Coates sent us an email through the week. Again, this was last week and I forgot to include it. G'day, Inks.
How many episodes are we in?
Oh, too many. Saw this mentioned on the ABC's news site and thought it might press your buttons. It's an exhibition at the Brisbane Museum of 100 Years of Studio Portrait Photography, running till the 30th of July. Regards, Rob. I'll put the link in the show notes for anyone that's up in Bris Vegas and wants to check that out.
Have you looked at any of the photos? Have they got a range of...
I have not yet. I caught these two things tonight and thought, oh, must make sure I put these in this week. I can't let it slide another week. So I've just loaded them up now. So I'm just having
It looks like they've got little different events on during. So one focus looks to be on wartime photography, which would be interesting.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the characters. I mean, because I said I was up in Ararat the other day. We were looking in the. In the Shire Hall, they've got this list of all the people who served in World War One and all the ones served. That's fascinating. You said they look at people, how many people went to war, and then there's how many people died in the war, and you're comparing names. And yeah, one family took six kids to had six children go to war, and all six came back. You know, it was just amazing. One had two kids and lost both.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's just that all that heartache and stuff. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I reckon that'd be kind of cool to walk around and have a look at, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So thanks for that link, Rob. And Adam sent through a plethora of stories.
Yeah,
the first one was how I photographed an erupting volcano in front of the Milky Way. And this guy really planned...
You put the volcano in front of the Milky Way.
Yeah, he did that. That's a great way to start. But this guy did a lot of research. He really planned it out. He knew where he wanted to shoot from and the angle that he wanted to have his camera facing. He researched... when the, you know, what time in the, you know, the, I was going to say lunar cycle, but not lunar cycle, but, you know, when the Milky Way would be in the right position in the sky relative to the volcano that was going to be the subject. He was checking the weather forecast to make sure that the weather was going to be clear. And he was also checking seismological reports to see what the level of activity of the volcano was like. He just managed to get all three, you know, of the so-called planets aligned, and it all came together for him. And yeah, he went off and did this shoot and got some really nice images of this volcano erupting. I think it was it Argentina or Chile or somewhere in South America anyway, Guatemala. And yeah. So anyway, some great images there for anyone that wants to have a look at that.
I'm just having a flick through the images. I mean, the lead-off article image is like, yeah, so who cares. But some of the panoramas are cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So
the panoramas gives you a little bit more context, a bit more environmentally interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Just some nice photos.
Yeah. The next one was about the theorizing that maybe Ricoh is going to kill off its Pentax business.
Yeah, it's rubbish. Yeah.
You don't believe it?
Well, they've come out and said, nah, it's rubbish. Which means it's either really going to happen
or
it's not. The coach has the full support of the board.
For the next week.
According to another article I saw today, they're saying, nah, that's all rubbish.
Right.
But you don't go on losing money for so long.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So.
News Corp, Australia. Now, Glenn, you picked up on this one, and I've seen it.
I picked up on that.
All over the web this week.
It's been everywhere on the web this week, Bruce.
Yeah, News Corp Australia sacks most of its photographers and sub-editors to cut costs.
Now, here's the thing. I read one thing saying that they sacked 42 people because they're trying to save $40 million off the budget. I'm going, a sec, they're overpaying these people.
Yeah.
It's the second 42 to save 40 mil.
Yeah.
It's not a bad... That job, you get it. What's the retirement plan like? You know?
Yeah.
But that's just part and parcel. And News Corp say they're in a fight for their life to just remain viable as a printed organisation. So, you know, it's fair enough.
Yeah. You know what gets me about these stories about, you know, all these, you know, massively profitable companies complaining about having to cut costs? They're never cutting costs at the upper management level. You ever notice that? Like,
to be fair, they did lose $264 million in the second quarter.
Right.
Which is a fair effort.
Well, you know, how much is going in Rupert's pocket?
The problem is, the company as a whole might be doing okay, but that particular department, yeah, not so good.
Yeah.
Not so good.
Yeah. Anyway. The next one I found really interesting because I'd never even heard of this style of photography. It was how I photographed the invisible light that plants emit.
Yes.
I didn't realize that there was this whole type of photography. Sorry, what were you going to call it?
Chameleon photography.
Well, they call it ultraviolet-induced visible fluorescence, UVIVF photography. And essentially, it's picking up the UV emissions from plants. So it's seeing plants the way insects and birds see plants, you know, in that visual range that's outside of, you know, what our eyes are capable of detecting normally. So, yeah, really interesting stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. Next up, the estate of Andy Warhol sues New York photographer over a Prince image. This is
they're both dead.
Yeah, I know.
Except maybe not the photographer doing the Prince image, though. It's so funny how an estate can sue someone, you know?
Yeah. So the photographer in question is Lynn Goldsmith, who's, you know, well known in the industry, has photographed a lot of, you know, celebrity music acts. Like she photographed Springsteen, photographed Prince. But the really interesting thing about this is she claimed that they'd ripped off her image, or that Andy Warhol had ripped off her image. His estate has fired back and gone, no, we didn't, because here's the original image and here's Andy's you know, interpretation, and you can see that this angle is slightly different and that angle is slightly different, and they're basically saying that, no, your image was not the source for Andy's image.
Yeah.
But she claims that the image that they have provided to say this was, you know, your supposed source is not the image that the Andy Warhol interpretation was taken from, and she's actually got the image which was the real source. And when you look at them side by side, you go, well, yeah, that's clearly the same image. You with me?
No, they're different images.
You don't think so?
They're definitely different images.
Okay.
They're of the same series. I mean, they're within a gnat's breadth of each other.
Yeah.
But they're not the same image.
Okay.
I mean, you look at the tilt of the lip. So, I mean, the left side of his lip's further away than in the Warhol image. The tilt of the nose is ever so slightly different. The tilt of the left eye is ever so slightly. So it's just out of sync, just a bit.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So, and it's a perspective thing. It's not, he's just rotated the image.
Right.
Yeah, so if you were to rotate the actual photograph a little bit to the left to line up the eyes the same,
yeah.
The left eye would still be slightly smaller than the right eye.
Have you scrolled down far enough to where the animated GIF is flashing between the two?
Yeah, they're different.
Okay.
Maybe.
I just don't think they're quite aligned.
I reckon the GIF.
The two layers aren't perfectly aligned.
The GIF image...
Mm-hmm.
Is not the same image, or is it? The first image you come across actually looks like a slightly different image than the one on the GIF.
Right.
It is.
Yeah. So that's what she's saying.
Right.
She's basically claimed copyright infringement. They've come back and gone, oh, no, this is the source image and this is Andy's interpretation and they're different images, which they are because they're not putting forth the real source image, which is what she's claiming is the source image, which does actually match up.
Mm. So who won?
I don't know if it's still going or...
Well, it was 1981, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah. So it says at the beginning...
You mean when the image was shot?
So the story starts off somewhere in 1981, photographed him, known as Prince. 3 years later, Warhol allegedly took the photograph and made a series of new pieces using the photograph as inspiration, but with the lawsuit.
The last paragraph says, while I hope Goldsmith is successful here, it will be interesting to watch how this plays out. If she does win, it will be equally as interesting to see what precedents and consequences it may present for those who also appropriate the work of others for their own, quote, creations, unquote.
Yeah. Why has it taken so long?
Good question. Good question.
It's like, really? 30-odd years, 40 years later, you're deciding to...
See, now I feel exactly that way about the lawsuit brought against Colin Hay from Men at Work over Down Under.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that was, 30-odd years after the song was a hit.
Yeah,
And they
I can see what happened there because somebody else bought the copyright to the image to the songs, and the person who now owned the copyright decided to do something.
In an instance like that, where the song was a hit, there should be a statute of limitations. If you've got a gripe about the source of this song, it has to be acted upon within 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever. Not 30 years down the track. Oh, that was a major hit. Maybe we can cash in on this.
That's also said. So in that instance, another company bought out the songs, that possibly with the whole intention of track the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is crap. And I feel, Colin Hay really got the rough end of the pineapple on that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, totally different story.
Yeah.
The next one was one that both you and Adam submitted, and this was rather nasty. David Schwimmer, known for the character of Ross in Friends, put together a series of public service announcements, and they're short videos, around about 3 minutes in length, and they're all about harassment, specifically sexual harassment towards women. And the title of the whole series is This Is Harassment. And this particular one shows a photographer working with a female model, and it is quite, as the title says, sickening PSA shows the ugly truth of sexual harassment in photography. Yeah. Fascinating concept for a short video, I have to say. The photographer is played by Bobby Cannavale, who... for anyone who saw or was aware of the TV show Vinyl, which only lasted for one season, unfortunately, he was the guy who played the head of the record company in that show. And he does the sleazy thing really well.
Yeah.
What's really interesting about this whole piece, I don't know if you watched the whole 3 minutes, Glenn, but it starts out, you only see... her for the first probably 30 seconds of the thing.
Yeah.
Then you see him sitting on the floor in front of her shooting her, and the conversation gets more and more lewd, and he's asking her to do things that clearly she's not comfortable with, And over the course of the 3 minutes, the camera eventually pans around behind her, and there's this whole crew of like 20 people standing behind watching it. And and they're all like, you know, art directors and this and that and whatever from the agency. Yeah. And the really horrible thing is the way he's, you know, prodding this girl, you know, to do things that clearly she's not comfortable with. And then suddenly he looks down at the camera and he goes, yep, I've got it, turns around, walks away, doesn't even say thank you to her, and, you know, goes off and hands the camera to, you know, one of the 20 minions out the back. And it really is. It's just a horrible, horrible piece of work. I mean,
and it's all taking little bits from different instances that's happened to different people. And, and I see it all the time. I mean, I talk to models all the time about the disgusting photographers who shoot them a lot of the time. A lot of these TFP people, time for prints, time for portfolio. I mean, there are some seriously sleazy photographers out there.
Oh, totally.
Don't be one of those people. Don't be one of those.
No.
Yeah, imagine it was someone you actually liked and cared about. Your sister, your mother, your daughter, you know?
Yeah.
And treat people with a bit of respect.
Absolutely.
Know? Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, it's worth a look, even though it is quite confronting. The next one, I gave it the title of Ripped Off because there really wasn't a title to this blog post, but it's written by a guy called Lee Nutter. Great name.
He's an absolute nut.
Yeah, that's right. And this was really sad. This is a guy who was reached out to by a magazine called Digital Photographer in the UK, who said that they were doing an article on black and white photography. They really loved his stuff. Would he be prepared to do a Q&A, you know, just via email that they could then publish into an article? And could he supply high-res versions of some of his images? And he went along with all of this because he was so excited. He's really passionate about his black and white photography, and he was excited to be featured in a magazine, and particularly in an article that was specifically about the niche in which he specialized. And so he got all worked up about it, and he answered all the questions, and he sent off all the stuff, sent off all the high-res images, and then never heard boo. And he sent emails and said, what's happening? Did I end up on the cutting room floor? Is it going ahead? Is it not going ahead? Didn't get a word of response from the magazine.
Yeah.
Eventually went searching and found reference to edition number 171 of the Digital Photography magazine having an article on black and white photography. And he'd also seen another photographer friend of his mention something on her site, and something twigged with him, and he thought, hang on, that wording sounds identical to something that I've encountered with this whole exchange with this magazine. So he reached out to her, and turned out she'd been approached in exactly the same fashion, had done all of the same stuff, had answered all their questions, provided high-res images, and had likewise tried to follow up and got no reply whatsoever from them. And so he did the dishonourable thing and went and downloaded a pirated edition of episode 171 of the magazine. And sure enough, there in the magazine is all his work with his name and his friend's work and her name. And he said, I just don't understand why a magazine that wanted to promote what we do to other photographers would treat the very photographers who are giving them the content for their magazine, why they would treat them this way.
And they didn't get an answer, I'm assuming?
No. and at the very end, you know, he basically just says, you know, avoid them like the plague. You know, if they approach you, don't waste your time.
Yeah.
Just horrific. Like, how hard would it be to reply, hey, yes, your stuff was great, it's coming out in 3 months, or, you know,
yeah,
whatever. Like, why?
And
why
it's happened to multiple people too.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, and the last one from Adam. This video explains all 27 Photoshop blending modes in detail. So, now, the link that Adam posted on the Facebook wall was to a Petapixel article. I'm not going to bother with that link. I've found the link for the actual YouTube video, and I will post that link as the link to that story, not to the Petapixel article.
Yeah.
So anyone that wants to check it out, it's about 40 minutes in length, so it is quite in-depth. He does quite a lot of a setup at the beginning, explaining what blend modes are and how they work before actually getting on to all of the 27 different blend modes in Photoshop and how each of them affects your image in a different way. So, yeah, I haven't finished watching it. I'm about 10 minutes into it. So. All right, Steve Peters sent us through Every Pixel Aesthetics, that is the name of this product, uses neural networks to judge your photographs.
I love this site. You would. We've done a similar one like a year ago, but this one's really good. Do you know why?
Why?
It gave one of my photos 100%.
Okay. Interestingly, the second quote in the comments, and that will obviously change as more people comment, but it was second when I looked at it, from somebody called Sundridge Pete, said, "The scoring associated with this beta version is severely flawed. When I submitted the same photo of a church in Imerovigli, Santorini, both as a low-res 293K image and a medium-res 3.35 megabyte image, I got respective scores of 0% and 99.3%. The tagging...
Well, between the two of them.
Yeah.
Takes the averages.
Yeah, the tagging...
Now you keep talking for a minute because I want to go get the power supply from my laptop before we run out of power. I'm down to 40%, and we just can't trust it. Keep talking.
Oh, dear. And he finished his quote with, "The tagging is incredible, however." And I did see there were other people in the comments who made similar reference to the tagging, that the predictive tagging of this algorithm is incredibly accurate. So, yeah. Very interesting. So you're back now.
My back.
Yes. So you like this particular algorithm then?
I only tried one photo. It gave me 100%, so I thought it must be good.
Oh, so you quit, I guess one of the things while you're ahead.
One of the things I did like about it is it generates tags for you automatically.
Yeah, and a few people have commented on that in the comments.
In a good way or a bad way?
Yeah, no, in a good way. And they're all saying, like, it's really good. The tagging is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's reasonably accurate and it saves you a lot of time, which is kind of handy. So, yeah.
Now, I'm not sure how much of this is just marketing guff, but the CEO said, "Designers, editors, and experienced stock photographers helped us generate a training data set with, wait for it, 946,894 positive and negative patterns. That's almost a million source images.
You're good, aren't you? Did you pick that up just that quickly?
Yes. It didn't take me long to work that out, mate. But seriously, like, who uses a million source images to create a... Don't tell me, these guys. But,
you know... Well, how long does it take to get a computer to run that many?
Well, though, probably really? Not many. Probably not long. But, yeah, I just thought, wow, that's a hell of a data set to start building from.
But, of course, you want a big...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A big expanse to work with.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then we're on to your stuff.
I've got nothing.
But I think we've covered all your stuff.
We have.
But you were... The money thing. What was the money thing?
What money thing?
I don't know. You've got some...
Oh, there's two things.
Yeah.
There's a torture test.
Oh, yes.
That I sent on the phone. So Shutterbug, the magazine, did a test on a Tamron 28-75 lens. I got a brand new lens out of the box and gouged a 5-centimeter chunk out of the front element.
Oh!
And then when...
What did the lens ever do to them?
It, well, to see just how much it would show up in the photographs. And the answer is, it doesn't. A wide angle, f/32, you don't see it. All these people so pedantic about even the slightest mark on the lens.
Yeah.
And there's this guy deliberately gouging a serious chunk out the front of the lens. No problem at all.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. No, I was flicking through stuff, and I've seen this online comparison test between it's comparing an $1,100 camera with a $6,000 camera.
Right.
It's entry level versus low end amateur versus top end pro sort of cameras.
Yeah.
So that's the test they're going to see whether it's worthwhile. But then it's got this great big photo of this guy holding two cameras, and the price above one is $999, and the price above the other one is $8,000. Okay, well, has it gone from $1,100 down to $999 and $6,000 up to $8,000 all of a sudden? You can't even get something as simple as that right, you know? It's like, I'm not going to bother. So I didn't bother reading the article after that.
Fair enough.
So if you can't get your picture to match up with your text.
Yeah.
It's not good. No, that was it. That was the biggest, most exciting thing I found all week.
Right. Excellent. Excellent. All right, mate. Yeah. So what do you got planned for the Easter weekend?
Go to the football tomorrow. First ever Australian rules football game on Good Friday.
Right.
So me and my eldest are going down to see that.
Okay. Who's playing?
North Melbourne, which is our team, versus the Bulldogs, which are the premiers from last year, and we're going to get spanked.
Right.
And we went down and saw the boys training today, so we had a bit of a fun day of footy with the kids. And so we're going to hang out, have a good day, and see what happens.
Excellent.
Catch up, family.
Yeah. As we are recording right at this very minute,
right now,
West Coast is playing Sydney Swans.
That's your team, isn't it?
That is my team, West Coast.
It's my youngest's team too.
She was walking
along with a North Melbourne player today.
Yeah.
Because my eldest had the North Melbourne football, and my little Grace is going to this guy from North Melbourne. I wish I had a West Coast football.
Good on her.
Yeah, she's a West Coast member.
Is that right? Youngest. Why?
Because my wife's a West Coast supporter. My in-laws are both West Coast supporters.
I knew I liked your wife for a reason.
My mother-in-law is in the banner-making squad.
Right.
Which doesn't mean anything to anyone outside of... Yeah, so... And you guys are winning. You're up by a couple of goals.
We are at the moment. I'm hoping we will be at the end of the game too. Anyway. All right, mate. Well, you have a good Easter weekend.
And to all our listener... Have a lovely Easter as well.
Absolutely. It'll be mostly over by the time you hear this.
Yes.
All right. We'll talk with you next week.
Absolutely. Bye, everyone.
See you, mate. Bye. All right. So I guess we'll just wrap it up with David Marlin's book review, and it's Ansel Adams in Colour. Keen to hear about this, David. Take it away.
Thanks, Bruce. Well, sooner or later, I would have to review another Ansel Adams book. But don't go to sleep just yet. Just quoting from the blurb of this book, Ansel Adams has long been revered as America's greatest landscape photographer. His luminous black and white images showcase gorgeous subtleties of light and shadow and have become icons. Well, enough said about that, because it's right at this point that this book is different. It's called Ansel Adams in Colour. What is not as well known as his black and whites are his colour photographs, and the book features a little over 100 of the 3,500 he made from the late 30s onwards. There's a large introductory piece on the quest for colour by James Enyart, which refers to the development of colour photography and intertwining Ansel's views on colour as colour developed and he developed his techniques. Two of the Ansel quotes that stand out for me are his comment that colour was a particularly difficult medium for landscape photography, and that Adams believed that control of one's medium was essential to producing the required visual information from which to derive a simulation of reality. Adams struggled to control the colour medium, as it had different limitations, and indeed more restrictive limitations than black and white. Nonetheless, he persisted, and what follows in the book are about 100 full-page plates. You can see in them Ansel's compositional skills, his feel for tone, and how he really appreciates nature. At the same time, he is struggling for control. But despite this, and as to be expected, there are many superb photographs. The book concludes with some selected writings by Ansel himself on the subject of colour photography, and it's not so much an essay but bits and pieces, because he didn't write much in a continuous form throughout his life. The book's a good read, and if you already have the book I reviewed earlier, Ansel Haddam's 400 Photographs, this is a good companion and may open your thinking about landscape photography. Ansel Adams in Colour, and that's colour spelt the American way, is published by Little Brown and Company. Booko has two editions. I've got the 2009 edition. It's a hardback, and it varies from $34 to $70. Well worth it. Cheers.
Excellent. Thank you, David. I actually had no idea that Ansel Adams actually shot in colour. Shows you how much I know. Because I just always associate him with black and white landscape stuff, and so I just assumed that he only ever shot black and white. There you go. All right, well, that's it for another week. Have a nice Easter break. If you are on the roads, please drive carefully. And until I speak with you again, take care.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShuttersIncPodcast.com.